Three, two, one.
Here we go!
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome everyone to episode 128 of the No Normal Show for November 4, 2021, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I am your co-host, Chris Bevelo, Chief Brand Officer at Revive. I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwell, who is SVP of Integrated Marketing at Revive. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Chris. We've made it to November.
We have. It's just a scary thing, actually. And our show's producer and co-host, Chase Kleckner, Senior Marketing Manager at Revive. Hello once again, Mr. Chase.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
Yes, so we have an awesome topic. We're going to spend our time on digital advertising. But before we get there, we probably should bring people up from last week's pod. It was a very scary podcast, a very scary show. Yes, it was. It was Halloween after all, but we might have been too dark, too scary. So let's just quickly share something that brought us a moment of joy since Halloween or with Halloween, and then we'll get into our main segment. So Chase, as you think about the last week since the last time we were together, what's brought you joy?
Mine's actually connected to Halloween. My Halloween, I've got three kids under the age of five, and we have my wife has a lot of siblings, so four sisters. They all have at least three kids. So we've got 16 cousins or nephews, nieces and nephews in the area. So we all got together for Halloween, went trick-or-treating, got way, way too much candy that my wife and I later stole the night of Halloween. But it was so fun just to see kids be kids and get out there and do trick-or-treat for what felt like normal compared to last year's trick-or-treating during COVID when it was pretty up and up. So that was my highlight of the week / Sunday.
Nice. I'm going to ask you both. Our trick-or-treat count was way down, which was kind of surprising given last year was COVID season more so. What about you guys? Did you see a noticeable change either way?
Yeah, for me, I did not see noticeable change, but you know, it's been so long. It's been so long since being out there. I don't know what's normal anymore. I have no idea. But
no normal.
Really excited. Exactly. Yeah, where I was trick-or-treating, there was animatronics and haunted houses and floats going down the road. So it seemed pretty lively.
Wow. Yeah, I heard multiple times, like homeowners, I didn't actually have any people come to our home because we weren't there. But when we were out and about, I feel like people were like, oh my gosh, this is the busiest I've seen it in years. Hmm. So it was lively where we were, but I don't know if that was just the neighborhood or whatnot.
It was cold. It got really cold and windy here. So it was like wind chill in the 20s. And you always wonder whether, I don't think that stops people. Like, I don't think people are like, oh, not going to do it. Just take your costume off. We're not going. But I think it does reduce their spread. I don't know how to put it. Reduces their scope. Yeah. They're like, instead of hitting 100 houses, we're going to hit 20. All right, Stephanie, moment of joy.
Okay. My moment of joy happened yesterday. I saw a really cool piece of news that there was a lot of progress made in local elections around candidates winning who are people of color. And so this, now I will just say this is certainly a small portion of the total, but in cities and states like Boston and New York City and Virginia and Cincinnati, and several others, there were some sort of historic wins in terms of mayor races, attorney generals, and other positions. So that was pretty cool. I think maybe one day we will see, candidates actually, and the winning candidates actually reflect those they serve. So I was excited about that.
That is really cool. And we're not going to talk about the election at all, but I will tell you that this is scary. I had like a full body shiver. I mean, what you're talking about is really great news, but the whole idea of the election any election. And just what goes with that, even though this was like an off year election, gave me a full body shiver. Like, oh my God, we're gonna have to go through this again, aren't we? We're gonna have to go through it with the midterms and then the presidential election. Like, oh my gosh. I'm gonna start now trying to figure out how to handle that, because it was not fun.
We all have residual trauma, don't we? No matter what side, no matter what side you're on, there's residual trauma. So I'm trying to look at the positives here, but I'm totally with you.
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to drag us back into the spooky and the scary. This was supposed to be a moment of joy. So those are both great ones. Those are about family and society. Mine is really silly, but boy, it's been great. So people know me. I'm a big video gamer. Love video games. Yes, I'm 53, but I love video games. I came up when video games were just coming on board, so I've had them since I was a wee lad. And there's a game right now called Deathloop, which sounds terrible, sounds very violent. It is very violent, but it's very cartoony. But it is maybe the most rich video game I've ever played. The premise is essentially you're on this weird island where there's like 8 super bad villains who have figured out how to control time. And so they restart the world every day, except for themselves. So they kind of control the populace that way. And so at the end of the day, you also have to start over with the day. And it is so complex. It is so rich. It's so beautiful. This story is incredible. The dialogue is incredible. It's like being immersed in a whole new world. And so it's fun, but also it just stews my creative juices. Does that make sense? Do you stew juices? I don't know if that's the right
Halloween
way to put
you
it.
Do.
But,
and Thanksgiving, yeah. Right? Thanksgiving, you stew juices, I think.
You stew juice. I don't know if that's a thing. Stew your juices for 10 minutes before adding cilantro. I don't know. Anyway, that's been my moments of joy in the last week, because I've been playing for a while, but I've had some spare time over the weekend and a weeknight, and it's so entertaining. So,
Chris, my favorite two facts about you are that you're a gamer and that you enjoy reality TV. I think those are things that people would not expect, and I love them so much.
The reality TV caught me by surprise.
Last night, after I was done playing Deathloop and my wife got home, I watched her watching Below Deck. So there you go.
There you go.
Both of them all in the same night.
That sounds like a perfect night.
It was a very nice evening, yes. Okay, let's move into our main segment. Let's dive in, because we want to spend a lot of time with this, and that is on digital advertising. What we really want to focus on primarily is a lot of the issues and challenges that have been growing. They're not really new. They've been around for a few years, and we'll talk about that. But they seem to be coming a bit to a head in terms of what we're hearing about them, what we're seeing about them. And they pose challenges to all of us that want to use digital advertising. And so the first thing I thought of is, we've been talking about this for so long. We've been talking and touting digital advertising. And the first place I did it publicly was in the Joe Public Doesn't Care About Your Hospital book, which is 10 years old. And I went back and found this gem. Stephanie, you'll love this. So this is for health systems. This book is for health systems. And there was a chapter in it about how health systems, hospitals and health systems need to embrace new ways of marketing, right? Which back then meant digital and social media and stuff. So here's a statistic. Here's a little citation. According to the IAB Internet Advertising Report conducted by Pricewaterhouse and Interactive Advertising Bureau, advertising expenditures on internet advertising exceeding those of newspaper advertising for the first time, 2010. Now we're at a place where they exceed everything, right? But this is the kicker. According to the latest By the Numbers report from Shushmid, which is our association for hospitals and health systems, healthcare marketers spent 24% of their advertising budget on print and 5% on the internet. This is 10 years ago. And according to our friend J.K. Lloyd, who we all know here from Eruptor, who is, you know, they are the masters of SEM, back then his estimation was only 20% of hospitals in 2011 had even used search engine marketing at all, had even run one. 80% of hospitals had not run an SEM ad in 2011. based on JK's estimate, which I think is probably fair. So we've been talking about this for a while. It continues to grow. So a couple statistics, one from CNBC. Despite COVID last year, digital advertising grew 12.2% in 2020, year over year compared to 2019. This year continues to grow. And according to an article in Marketing Tech News, ad spending in the U.S. digital advertising industry will cross the $200 billion mark next year, after it reached $190 billion this year, which is 14.8% growth year over year. And when you break it down, I thought this was interesting. Search advertising was about $78 billion. Banner advertising was $68 billion. Video advertising was 18.5% or of that total. So it said four segments. What did I miss there? Search, banner, video. There must be another. Who knows? The mystery. What do you think it would be, Stephanie? What's the fourth one? What are we missing here?
I don't know, but the stats you just threw out are fascinating. It's really cool and interesting to time travel. And as I was looking at some similar stats from eMarketer, and we look at share of total media mix today and what's predicted over the next few years, what's fascinating is healthcare and pharma as an industry is still only at 7.2, 6.4% 2020 and 2021, respectively. Now, in this definition, because we're defining things, this includes specifically advertising on desktop, laptop, computers, mobile, tablet, and internet-connected devices, and I believe focus squarely on display. So that's why it's smaller percentage than the ones that you just referenced, at least in terms of a growth standpoint. But I think the point is it's still a relatively small piece of the pie.
Yeah, it is. I think Scott Galloway, who we'll cite a couple times, said that it is now the biggest advertising spend. So if you look by category, television, you know, outdoor, whatever, print, it's the number one overall, right? But what's interesting is the issues that have been growing, right? I remember writing a blog post about Procter & Gamble in 2018 cutting $200 million from their spend. And the headline there is, They had recognized that so much of their digital advertising spend was just pure waste or fraud, and they cut $200 million, and that cut resulted in an increased reach of 10%, which says a ton, right? JP Morgan in 2017 looked at their digital spend and realized their ads were spread across 400,000 websites, right? So they went through and they were really meticulous and said, we only want to be on these 5,000. And so they cut it by whatever that percentage is. That's a huge cut. And saw no difference in their results, right? So this is because there is so much waste and fraud. So here's some statistics from ClickGuard. Almost half of all internet traffic is generated by bots. That's a 2020 quote. One out of every $3 spent by advertisers wasted due to ad fraud. That's by MediaPost in 2019. 14% of all pay-per-click clicks are estimated to be click fraud. That's from ClickGuard 2020. 56% of all online ads are never seen by a human. That's Ad Age back in 2014. I don't know whether that's gotten worse or better. I'm assuming worse. And global businesses are expected to lose $44 billion by 2022 due to ad fraud. Scott Galloway, who we love, went on a rant on this. He cited a few things, such as he cited, I think, $150 billion in fraud, which would make it, I think he said, the largest criminal enterprise, second only to the drug trade. And then he also cited a study by an MIT professor, Catherine Tucker, and we'll provide links to all of these, that talked about targeting overall. So this is primarily digital, the use of digital to target folks, that if you target on something as basic as gender, which is probably the most broad slice you can make when targeting, that was unsuccessful in reaching your designated gender more than half the time. And since primarily there are two genders. We know we're in a different world now, but if you think about what you could target, male versus female, and you're wrong more than half the time, you're better off not targeting at all. Because you could flip a coin and do better than that, right? So these are all the things that are out there. Plus, we have Apple and Google moving to hamstring the power of advertisers to target people digitally through changes to cookies, privacy, that type of thing. So there's the setup. Stephanie, what's a marketer to do? What, I mean, we still believe in this. We still think it's the right thing to do. Scott Galloway will say that despite all of the things we just went through, you still got to leverage this strategy, these channels. So what? How do we do that in a way that we're not throwing out tons of money?
Yeah, so that's the million-dollar question, right? Literally.
Billion.
Literally the million-dollar question. So a few things, I think. First of all, these are important issues to be aware of and to be talking about and to recognize some of the things you threw out, like the gender issues with being able to or not being able to really truly target in the way that we think we are, is needing to recognize that sometimes technology is not advanced yet as we think it is or want it to be. And we can have all these grand ideas about what's possible in the future, tomorrow, through AI and through technology and through machine learning, but sometimes we're just not there yet. So I think there's that important recognition and then making sure that our strategies match where we really currently stand. So a few things I'll just throw out and we can talk through them. Is first of all, really keeping in mind where in our marketing mix should we be using digital advertising? And I'm speaking about specifically display versus programmatic versus search versus video, and just getting very specific with the channel strategy. So just giving an example, if the goal were awareness, then video is probably better for that than things like display. And we can go deep into that, because I would actually question, why is your goal awareness? There are way too many programs where the goal is awareness and the KPIs are impressions. That absolutely should not be the case. And it's very few instances where that actually makes sense as a goal. And perhaps it's if you actually have an awareness problem. And even then, I look at really interesting kind of growth brands, unicorn brands. I'll take Peloton, for example, where they actually started with product marketing and with digital advertising. That was where they began. And then they moved their way into brand advertising and video and TV and CTV. So I think just being really, really shrewd about the objectives and about why you're using specific channels is step one. There's probably, I think, five steps we can talk about, but let me just pause there because there's a bit to unpack with that.
Well, I jumped out of my chair, Stephanie, when you used the words KPI and impression in the same breath, because I mean, that we can start with that. We can dive into that, right? It's so much like old school marketing. I mean, I have fought for years to try to convince people impressions are not a metric of success or impact. They are a input, not an output of your efforts, meaning you buy impressions. It's the same thing as saying, in the old school marketing, we printed 10,000 brochures. That's not a result. That's not a KPI. So when we think about impressions out in the real world, it's like a billboard to me, where they say like, well, you got 1 million impressions from having your ad on this billboard because 1 million cars drove by this week. Well, okay. How many of those cars actually saw your billboard, like took in the content, had it register? You know, it's not 1 million. And as we think about impressions online, huge danger in using that in any way to measure success. It's a metric you can look at, but given all of the fraud, and also just even not fraud, just having display ads on a website, we all know what we do. We typically ignore them. We try not to deal with the display ads. Can't help it, but so we could start with that, but that's why we're going to talk more about what is important to measure, right?
Yes. And you know what's fascinating is I think probably everybody generally agrees with that and generally knows that. And then yet, when you look at things like award winners, which we looked at a few weeks ago, we had this conversation then too, because it was like, what does success mean? Oh, great reach. So it's this very weird tension between, I think philosophically, everyone nods their head and is like, yeah, we knew that a long time ago. And then you look at how campaigns are often created and run, and it does not match the philosophy. So I think it's absolutely critical.
I saw a quote from Adidas. I don't know who it was. It was someone from their marketing department, a leader on their marketing department, about this issue, about fraud, and about how they basically says they were so focused on short-term digital performance metrics that they underinvested in long-term brand building. The problem is not the metrics per se, but a focus on the wrong metrics. Digital technology offers a wealth of short-term measurements, often in real time, which has resulted in marketing investment being misredirected.
Yeah.
I love that. So maybe,
No, you go ahead.
We're also excited. Well, I was just going to shift into what are some of those right metrics. And I think I would even argue things like clicks are not even right. Right? Things like engagement is not even right. The number of times I've seen likes, comments, shares, engagement rates being touted is just absolutely outrageous. So what is right? I think because one reason clicks are important to not put all of our eggs in that basket is exactly the things you just teed up earlier, which is the fraud, the accidental clicks. So instead of looking at, you know, click-through rate as a standard measure, to take a step back and understand who is visiting the site, whether they clicked through the ad or in general, what did they do from there? Understanding actual behavior change, did it create behavior change? And even further than that, I had a conversation with our media leads ahead of this, and they were talking about an important metric that they look at, which they call site visit rate. So meaning what is the ratio of page visits compared to impressions, page visits in general, compared to how many people it reached. So it's going to be lower than click-through rate, which may feel uncomfortable to some, but it gives us at least a better sense of, are people coming? Are they doing what they want? And then as mentioned before, what do they do from there? Are they taking action? Are they coming back after that? So I think that's at least a little bit of a step forward from all the things we see out there around impressions, likes, comments, shares, engagement rate, clicks, which are usually the standard metrics.
Yeah, they're all important in terms of measuring kind of the progress along the way. They just have to be relative to what you're trying to accomplish, just like you laid out. And they're good to like compare what, you know, this spend got us, let's say, this number of page views or this number of click-throughs, to compare the two, knowing that both of those are relative to whatever percent of fraud. And it's still amazing to me when you talk through this, you know, like the idea of click farms and stuff, but that we still have like the idea of accidental clicks, that's still a thing. I mean, that's been with us for 15 years, 20 years, as long as there's been display ads, as long as I play Words with Friends with my wife. And, you know, that is an ad supported, because we don't pay, it's an ad supported app. It's fine. But usually, like, if you play your word and then you get presented with an ad, and you know how you get out of that? You have to use your, and I don't have fat fingers, but you have to use your fat finger to click on the little X. And if you're off in any way on the little X, guess what happens? You go to the ad. It's amazing. That's still a thing. It's still a thing. And I think in many cases, intentional. Sometimes you can't find the X. They move the X. It used to be the upper right. Now it's in the upper left. Why is it in different places? It's hidden. Like, it's like they're trying to get you to click, to push on that, to just touch it. Because, boo, there's
well,
a
they
click
are
there.
Because their monetization model is based on being able to say to advertisers,
yes,
here's the click-through rate. So of course that's not being changed.
But yeah, that just points to the whole thing. Sorry, Chase.
No, I mean, they're not going to tell you what the bounce rate is or the exit rate of those leads or clicks, because they've got to be enormously high. And I think that's something you got to look at too from whenever you're getting website traffic to your site, referral traffic, just seeing what the exit rate is and bounce rates are, because you will see variation between the two, like, or multiple sites. So
Yeah, and one thing we're not even talking about here, which is probably a whole separate topic, is attribution, and ways to actually do that in a smart way. But I bring that up because I'll just give an example from my personal behavior. So I personally am a huge fan of retargeting, and I use it intentionally from an e-commerce standpoint to keep myself reminded of things that I liked, but I'm too lazy to add them to my cart. I'm too lazy to put them on my wish list, and I just know now that I'm gonna get served retargeting for all the things that I looked at on the internet. And I don't have to make my decision today because I'm gonna get followed around for 4 weeks and I can kind of wait. Now, they can't measure that, right? They don't know that every time I see it, I'm reminded, I'm like, oh yeah, I might buy that. And so I think there's some interesting assumptions there and some other types of studies that can be put in place to understand what is the value of some of these of some of these tactics. And they may not be a click or a website visit.
Yeah, you found an interesting article. We'll post a link to it from Harvard Business Review about the difference between correlation and causation with these ads. And it reminds me of the conversation, Stephanie, we all had when we were prepping for this a few days ago. This has to be 7, 8 years ago, back when Facebook, so we're back to Facebook again, tried to convince the world that, you know what? It's not about the click-throughs, it's about the impressions. So, for example, we know Chris Bevelo likes super soft pretzels. I love those things, by the way. You can buy
Yes,
those in
so
the store,
good.
right? You can microwave them, they're awesome, right? We know we have the data that shows he likes those. So we can serve him an ad because we know he likes it. So we're targeting him appropriately. And guess what? Then he buys the super soft pretzels. Look how effective the ad was. And you're like, because their click-through numbers were so horrid at the time, they were trying to convince people it's not about the click-throughs, it's about the impressions. And that kind of that the way they laid out how all that works, they were trying to take credit for me buying super soft pretzels because I was served an ad because I like super soft pretzels. Like, wait a second, that's not right. And so that is in play still today with all of this. You have to think about all of that in the context of the journey that people actually make and how they live their lives.
Yes, I'm going to jump on a quick soapbox here because I think that HBR piece was really calling out the crux of the issue and also calls out something that we can do about it, that marketers can do about it. So to your point about understanding correlation versus causation, that made me start thinking about all the things that marketers need to really sharpen their knowledge on, because when you dig into what creates behavior change, it is such a large topic, right? It includes consumer psychology. It includes behavioral science. It includes a really deep understanding of statistical me methods, of modern analytics and attribution, and the list goes on, right? So it makes me think, what are we doing in order to learn personally, but also never stop learning in terms of our strategies? So what I mean by that is if you don't have a robust test and learn strategy across your entire marketing practice, that's probably a great place to start. Are you A/B testing in every single campaign? Do you have documented learning objectives? Are you personally, and is your team personally hiring people who are experts in statistics, in consumer psychology, in behavioral science, in attribution? And are you personally learning and investing there? Because that really deep understanding of what's creating behavior change is the whole point of marketing. And if all we're doing is just measuring, some of these KPIs we've talked about, then we're not doing enough.
I love that idea of documenting those learnings from A/B testing, because even if you have, I don't know, right? There's a huge turnover issue that's happening right now, and people switching companies. To be able to share those learnings with new people that join the team, or even just other people that are taking over new responsibilities, that is such a great resource for your internal team.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Stephanie, so far this is what I've written down as our recommendations. You still need to use digital advertising and marketing, still really powerful. I will say, a week ago, I was served up an ad for Allbirds, an amazing shoe, and I bought it. Like, I wasn't sure I even heard of Allbirds before that. I think I had, but barely. But it was, I think, an Instagram ad. Done. You got me. So it works. Second of all, you gotta have the right perspective, though. You have the right perspective of all of this. you have to understand that there's a bit of black box to this in terms of all the things that have to, you know, go from you spending money as an advertiser to driving people in. So make sure you have the right perspective. Test and learn. So be testing all the time what's working, what's not. And make sure you're focused on the right metrics. Make sure you're focused on what do you want people to actually do? Buy those shoes, right? That's the measure of success for Allbirds in their digital spend. Not whether I looked at the ad, not whether I clicked on it. Those are okay metrics. They're not the ultimate metrics. Anything else?
Yes, one more thing. The creative aspect, right? So let's say the media mix is in a good spot. Let's say there's a strong measurement plan. Then creative is still, of course, a very important piece of the puzzle. So it all just needing to work together in terms of, is the creative truly mapped towards the right objective? So if you've got a brand building piece of creative in display, that's probably not going to work as well as if it is very specific to that objective, as you're talking about with Allbirds, right? Like a lot of cases, and I think retailers do this very, very well, where they just serve up the image of the shoe that they know that you want. That's it. That's it. That's all they need to do. Again, it's that reminder of, do you like this shoe? Yes or no. It's product marketing versus brand marketing. And there are other really awesome spaces from a brand marketing standpoint, because as we mentioned earlier, you need both. So I think it's having that creative mapped back to the larger objectives. And I'll just call out that one of the interesting changes we've seen in the industry over the last couple of years is there's constant ebb and flow of having creative and media and analytics and all those things under one roof versus dividing up into multiple shops and multiple even teams or in-house. And so there's a lot of good reasons to do that. But if that's the case, then they all need to be really, really aligned and really, really integrated.
All right. Awesome. There you go. Nice primer on digital advertising, where we're at today, challenges, solutions. Boom.
Boom.
Boom. You can drop the mic on that, Stephanie. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, it is, if I were to put a stake in the ground of what is the biggest issue facing the industry today, it is number one, measurement. And the importance of that, which we've been talking about here, in light of all of the technological issues, fraud, clickbait, et cetera. And there's probably, we could argue about that all day long of what's the number one issue. I think DEI and diversity is a very important one as well, but huge, huge, huge topic.
Big topic. And we'll revisit it again, I'm sure. That was a great primer. But as you said, at some point, there's probably a dozen things we could have dove into and spent a whole half hour on. So love to hear from people if there is one of those 12 things or something we didn't talk about that he wants to go deeper into. We'd love to do that, or any other topic, because that's how we roll here at the No Normal Show. Stephanie and Chase, thanks again for being with us.
Yes, that was fun.
Thank you.
For everybody else, thanks for joining in. Again, if there's something you want to cover, email nonormal@reviveagency.com. Make sure you share the show with your friends. Give us a review. Give us a rating on iTunes. Hopefully positive, but be honest. We want to do better always. Any of that's appreciated. Until next week, don't be satisfied with the normal. Push the no normal. Thanks for joining. Talk to you next week.
3, 2, 1. Here we go.